This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts, gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today is about the girls. Today we have Rebecca Jennings on, who is a writer at New York Mag, specifically for Vulture, and she is who wrote the feature slash profile on the Women of Summer House that came out last week. I'm sure you saw some of those photos, maybe some of those quotes from that article. I love some of the themes that Rebecca brought up in her piece, and I wanted to expand on them with her. So I invited Rebecca onto the show today, where we talked at length just about, you know, the evolution of Summer House and the women sort of emerging as the big stars of the show that the audience is so invested in, how that happened, why that happened, some of the factors that went into that. We also got into sort of how that fits into some of the other younger shows on Bravo, specifically Southern Charm, which is kind of the polar opposite of Summer House in this regard. So we had a really good conversation, and I really do think it's sort of the perfect time to talk about this, given like the continued success of Giggly Squad, the Paige and Craig breakup. Like, it's just coming at this perfect time to talk about some of these themes. So that's going to be after this intro. I'm going to go a little long, I guess, up here just to talk about this week's The Valley, After Show, Summer House, Paige and Walter Happens Live. So fast forward if you want to get to my chat with Rebecca, which is super interesting. But okay, let's see. So the second episode of The Valley, first of all, featured another cameo by Gabbing with Gib, which I just have to mention up top. Will never get old. Very, very cool to see. So it starts off with the scene between Jax and Kristen, where Kristen comes over and she tries to talk some sense into Jax. And, you know, he maintains here and he maintains in the after show that he has never said poor things about Brittany to her, about her appearance. And Kristen's like, dude, I've seen the text messages. Stop denying it. And even in the after show, like, literally everybody else on the cast is like, yeah, he has said things about Brittany being fat. He has called her, Brittany says he called her a tree trunk, and Jax is continuing to deny it. So, like, again, for the 1 millionth time, Jax will never learn and he will never truly admit to all his wrongdoings. But who's surprised, right? And then Brittany and Michelle go over to Janet's house. And this situation is actually super interesting to me because, you know, we have Janet and Kristen, who obviously do not like each other. They have this big falling out. They are totally at odds with one another. Zach is on the side of Kristen, of course, because it's a lot about what he has said about Janet, allegedly. And then we have Brittany, who, as I said last week, brought Zach into this group. But then she heard some of the things that he said and she distanced herself from him. But then she has accepted him back because she has so much other more important shit going down. Like, she can't worry about, like, supporting Janet through this feud with Kristen and Zach. Like, she just has to, especially in a time like this, Brittany needs to feel the love of her friends. So she's like, I'm not going to, like, coddle either side as they're, like, going against one another, which I really respected. But I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that plays out. And Kristen was on Watch What Happens Live after the episode. Great, great episode, by the way. She was in amazing form. Her and Nia both super pregnant. And first of all, iconic that she gave Andy the green dress from Vanderpump Rules Day. She's retiring it by donating it to the clubhouse. And she said on there, she was like, well, you know, Janet was a big fan of Vanderpump Rules. And in the trailer, there is a moment where Kristen also calls her a fan. And there, I guess, about Janet, there have been a lot of Reddit threads about, like, how she supposedly was a super fan of VPR. And then she moved out to LA and she became friends with Sheena right away. So there's a lot of kind of smoke around that. And I think that's going to maybe be brought up in some way on the show this season, because I think there's a lot of, like, insinuation happening. And then we have Jesse and Michelle, and it's just like, they so clearly hate one another's guts. So she says at one point, she's like, I'm angry because you treat me like shit. You've told me multiple times that you don't give a fuck that I'm the mother of your child. And then Jesse has this sort of very Jax-like reaction where he's like, I didn't say that. And then instead of doubling down on that, he says, well, you said this. It's sort of the Jax reaction where it's like, he's confronted with something bad that he did. He denies it at first. And then instead of continuing to deny it, he deflects by bringing up something bad that his former partner has done. And again, I am sure that Brittany and Michelle have both done things that aren't great in these situations. They're very dark, toxic situations. So that brings out the worst in people. But I really do feel like it's fueled by Jax and Jesse. And he says at another point, he's like, I'm 99% sure that she cheated on me twice in our relationship. And then we have this iconic, to me, instantly kind of canon moment where Michelle's like, I mean, the new girl you're seeing is sleeping with somebody else. She told my friend that. And Jesse's like, who's this friend? And Michelle's like, it's Sheena Shea. Of course it's Sheena. Sheena's a bone collector. Sheena has the tea on everybody because she is a professional reality star who is incredible at her job. So they, on the spot, they call up Sheena, put her on speakerphone. And she's like, yep, verbatim, that's true. And it's the guy from Baywatch. She doesn't say which guy from Baywatch, but she just spills the fucking tea. And this is the moment, I made a TikTok about this, but this is perfectly indicative to me of why Sheena deserves to be on The Valley and why it's good that she's here. She is very naturally part of this friend group. She has been around them for a very long time. She knows the tea. She has the information. She's good at being a reality star, which is carrying information, which is sharing information. And we wouldn't have gotten this tea without her. Jesse's new girlfriend buddied up to her at some party. The first time that she had ever met Sheena, we learned this in the after show. The first time she ever met Sheena, they start talking. And who knows, maybe Sheena led the conversation there. She probably did. But like the first time she meets her, she tells her that she's actually sleeping with somebody else. And Sheena's like, well, the girls on the after show are like, well, she probably told Sheena that because she knew she would eventually tell Michelle, which of course. What's also interesting is that sort of the other side of it, like Nia, Kristen, some of the other people, they really like Jesse's girlfriend. And it sounds like he's still with her. So yeah, I'm curious if she'll be on the show. But apparently we find out also in this episode that she is threatening allegedly to send cease and desist to the group for talking about her. We find that out in the Brittany, Janet, Michelle lunch scene, which that amazing moment where Brittany is holding up the allegedly sign. I loved that so much. I thought that was really funny. But yeah, so this Jesse's girlfriend, I mean, he's still with her. So maybe he doesn't believe this Baywatch thing, or maybe it was happening when they weren't exclusive or something like that. And again, they don't say who it is on the episode, but I may or may not have found out which guy from Baywatch Sheena's talking about. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to say it. I'm going to save it. I'm not going to say it on this episode just in case it comes out. But if it doesn't come out in the next like week or so, I'll share it. We also find out about Jesse and Michelle in the after show that, so Michelle's like, yeah, I actually moved closer to Jesse so that, you know, it could be really easy for Isabella. We can be really close to him. It could just be really good for her schedule. And Jesse says that, no, actually, Michelle's lease was up. So she moved in with the boyfriend. And I guess that happens to be close to his house. And he says he found out through Isabella. Again, that's just like one of those things where it's like, I actually do maybe believe that that's how he found out. And should Michelle have told him? I don't know. But that is what, to me, separates The Valley, is like, we know all these couples are having issues, they're breaking up or they're just fighting, and we're getting both sides of the story, and they're both very biased in their retelling. And so Michelle says it one way, Jesse says it the other. Is the truth somewhere in the middle? Probably. But I love how we kind of hear the same story being told with some truths being omitted very, very conveniently. So I don't know. I think it's fascinating. And that's sort of one of the things I love about this show. You know, we also see Jason and Danny kind of doing this quasi intervention for Jax. And it's like, you got to change for Cruz. And Jax is like, at one point, I don't think I'm as bad as they make it out to be. And we hear a Danny confessional where he's like, what's bad to you, man? I mean, you're throwing furniture. Brittany won't even let you see her son alone. That sounds really bad to me. And then we find out that he's going to check into this mental health clinic. But then even then, it's like he is asking if he can go for a shorter amount than the required 30 days. Can he get his money back if he leaves early? And he also blames it on, like, you know, things that run in his family. He wants to break the cycle, which is like, that's all good and well, right? But like, I don't know. I feel like Jax, to me, he's clearly an addict, as he's admitted. But he uses his addiction to excuse bad behavior that has nothing to do with his addiction. And like, again, I'm not an addiction expert, but to me, like, a lot of the things can be separated. And I mean, we see, I think he's allegedly sober now, right? So it's like he's still not owning his shit. He's not. And as actually, as Janet says in the after show, she's like, he doesn't have that panic that somebody would have if they really felt like they were at their rock bottom. He still, as she says, like, it feels like he enjoys the alone time, that like the separation and being away from Brittany and like kind of being able to still live his own life, but also be a dad. And like in his mind, he's kind of like having his cake and eating it too in some ways. And like, I absolutely agree with that. Like, I'm still not convinced that he recognizes the full problem and everything he has to fix, you know? So I don't know. Like, it's dark from him. And I just don't believe him. Like Kristen says on Watch What Happens Live that like she's had that the conversation at the top of the episode. She's had that conversation with him many times. Even since then, she's had that conversation with him. And it's like, at what point do you like just, I mean, that's like a waste of energy. He's not going to change in that way. I don't know. Like, and I guess she says at some point, she's like, I think she said it on the after show, the reason why she keeps trying for Jax is because she knows that like a better Jax, a more settled Jax, a less volatile Jax is better for Brittany and Cruz. Even if they're not together, that's still the father of Brittany's son and they still have to co-parent. And so the better place that he's in, the more beneficial it is to Brittany, not like for the sake of them getting back together again, just for the sake of their co-parenting relationship. And so I really admire Kristen for that. Like it really isn't about Jax. But it's like, God, like at some point this, like, do we change tactics? I don't know. It's like, God, I'm so not envious of the people who have to sort of still coexist with him for the sake of Brittany. I really don't envy that. One of the funniest scenes of the episode was when Brittany, Janet, and Michelle went to lunch and they're talking about how Brittany went over to their house to collect some things. She went into the bathroom and there was this thong with a baby wipe on top of it. First of all, the way that Brittany says thong, it's not even a hot thong. Thong, like the way that she says thong, I'm obsessed with her. I'm obsessed. Like, I'm really living for Brittany right now. And like, I agree with the people in the after show who said that the girl or Jax, maybe both of them, left it there to get under Brittany's skin. You know, like that is probably why that thong was left there. But also gross. Like the side-by-side photo, I was losing it. And then obviously the episode ends with this incredibly, incredibly dark scene. Probably one of the darker things that maybe has ever been on Bravo, where Brittany goes over to the house with Cruz. She's waiting on Jax to come back. She's bringing Cruz over and Jason's going to come and drive Jax to the mental health facility. And we have these like this really dark, even just the B-roll is dark. It's like a card taped over the security camera, rotten fruit on the counter, a really gross refrigerator with an empty cup with lipstick on it inside of it. We have picture frames turned around. Like the house is in dire straits, I would say. And then we get security camera footage of Jax's woman from the night before, a very booby woman that they showed on the screen. They showed one of her Instagram shots, her leaving the house early that morning via security camera footage, because when Cruz went to go greet Jax, which was an interesting greeting, Brittany was like, don't kiss him on the face. I don't want you kissing him on the face. You probably haven't even showered since you hooked up with that girl. And so that obviously starts the fighting. And one of their big rules we know has been that they can't have hookups or other people over to the house and they can't have them in front of Cruz. And, you know, again, once again, Jax is like, well, you break rules too with Julian. Like he always has to go tit for tat for her instead of just, again, owning his own behavior and his own breaking of the rules. And Brittany then threatens him with a restraining order if he doesn't stay for the full 30 days of the mental health clinic. This is where it's like, whoa, what are we watching? She's like, you have a coke problem. And he's like, well, you've never done it. Again, tit for tat. She says, I never said that I never done it, but she's not addicted to it. She doesn't have a problem with it. She's done protecting him. And you know what? She says at one point, she's like, he'll realize one day that I'm the only one that has loved him enough to push him to get help. And I very much believe that. Like, he's clearly had some enablers around him. He's clearly had other men with probably similar issues around him who can't force him to get help. And she's holding his feet to the fire. And, you know, to his credit and to her credit, I guess, like he's going to the facility. But that scene was really, really wild to watch. And it's like, you know, on the one hand, it's like, whoa, should we even be watching this? You know, like whoa, like how do we get here? And on the other, it's like, you know what? This is reality. This is their reality. This is reality TV. This is, they're bearing it all for us on the Valley. And for better or worse, we're seeing the true, we're getting true insight into the status of these relationships. And I also think what's interesting about the Jackson Brittany scene at the end of the episode was like, you know, they're both sort of yelling off camera at producers, talking to them, trying to get like that kind of validation for their side of the argument, you know, and we don't see the producers, but you can't help but think there's like this big subtext in this scene about like, would they have gotten here without reality TV? It's impossible to extricate from the situation, but like, this isn't a normal breakup. This breakup has so many factors. And one of them is the fact that we have cameras around, you know, it just makes you think. The last thing I want to mention about the Valley from this week, the segment in the after show where they are talking about Jax selling his free PR gifting on eBay. Incredible. 10 out of 10, cinema, Emmys, Oscars, all of it. I was peeing my pants when they were talking about the fact that he was
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Texting Jenny Craig tote bags and half-used tubs of protein powder. And what else? I mean, he was just listing basically everything. He was like, and listen, personally, I think there's no shame in that game. I have also listed PR gifting on Poshmark and things like that over the years because like it can get you some good cash. But it is funny thinking about him doing it. Yeah, I was crying at that. I was really crying at that. Again, if you're not watching the Valley After Show, what are you doing?
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Summer House, I feel like I don't have that much to get into from Summer House. The Schwartz visit was kind of whatever to me. I appreciated, though, that he got Jesse to reenact Togate in Imral's room because he's not there that weekend. It kind of gave me a better sense of what was going on. And again, I do believe that it was just a toe sucking. I do. Paige said on Watch What Happens Live that she also believes that. I think that if more happened, she's right. Even if Imral covers the cameras would, they pick up audio. They would know if more was going on, and they would have like alluded to that. You know, they would have shown the receipts on Jesse, and they didn't show those. And I also think that Emeril would have said something if more happened. So I believe that. We have this boys' night where, like, a lot of people on social media were talking about this when they were the boys were like, what kind of porn do you guys like? Like, what's kind of like the weird stuff you guys like? And Carl kind of like gets crickets when he's like, I like tan line porn. Girl, I have never heard of that. I haven't looked it up. Maybe I should look it up after I stop recording this. But I certainly have never heard of tan line porn. But you know what? This is not a kink shaming podcast. So you do you, Carl, truly. A lot of this episode was about Lexi and Jesse, and I do sympathize a lot with Lexi because I do feel like Jesse is saying one thing to the house and one thing to her, and he's misrepresenting things. And I do think that, like, it's like, yeah, she has a point where it's like, why are you following all these new girls ever since we started hooking up and dating and getting exclusive? Like, why are you still following other women? Totally valid. On the flip side, it's like, it's a little, why is she going to look for it too? You know what I mean? And she's going to look for it because she's getting the messages from random people being like, he's doing X, Y, and Z, this, that, and the other. But still, I do feel both ways about it. But I think ultimately, I really do sympathize with Lexi, especially because, she is sort of alone. And I think that, you know, she talked in the Glamour article about feeling isolated. And I think that the fact that Bailey isn't there anymore is making her feel even more isolated, because Jesse has sort of framed things to the girls and the guys in the house, which kind of has created a distance between them and her. And I think it was nice to see in this episode the girls sort of rally around Lexi and hear her side of the story and validate that and really, really show they were hearing her and listening to her and showing that they weren't fully sort of on the Jesse side of things. And I'm recording this as the Summer House reunion is probably finishing taping today, so I'm so curious sort of where that's going to net out at the reunion and whether that's going to change from where we're seeing it now on the show. But ultimately, Lexi's argument is like, listen, you give me reasons to feel insecure in my relationship, and I don't want to be in a relationship where I don't trust that person. Totally valid. And I think from his side, it's like, it just sounds like she's making him resent his friends. And It was funny seeing that conversation between, I think it was Amanda, Paige, and Wes on that bed at the party. And Wes was sort of realizing that, like, whoa, like, Jesse's been telling me this whole time that Lexi's the one that's pushing for the relationship. Lexi's the one that's kind of fast-tracking things. But then from Lexi's perspective, as told to the girls, and now as told to Wes, it's actually the opposite. And I do think that both are kind of true. Like, Lexi's the one that was pushing for the parents meetings, and like, that's definitely fast tracking in some ways. But it also sounds like Jesse literally contacts her 40,000 times a day. I mean, we saw that during the boys' night. He was like blowing her up and FaceTiming her and stuff. So it's sort of like, I think they're both, I don't know, they're like not aligned. They're not. And I think it was good to see both separate conversations come to the conclusion, basically for verbatim, that they don't have a good enough foundation to be having these issues and to be able to sort of survive these issues. So yeah. And then the last thing I'll say about this week's Summer House before I get into Watch What Happens Live and then my conversation with Rebecca, the Sierra and Carl thing, keep it. I'm sorry. This is giving random storyline. Like, it's awkward. It's like, bring back Lil. And if I'm saying bring back Lil, that's saying something. Like, I don't want, like, this Carl Sierra thing, really? Sierra's not going to go for Carl. She has sworn off showmances. And if she's ever going to do a showmance again, it would be with Jesse. It's not going to be with Carl. What is this? It's all the cuts to him, like when she makes a comment, or like, it's just, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. I don't need it. I don't want it. That I'm really good on. That's giving force to me. All right. So then we finally got Paige DeSorbo, Watch What Happens Live, paired with Casey Rose Wilson of Bitch Sesh. A dream duo, if you ask me, truly. What a pairing. Inspired booking, I think, by my friend Kyle at Watch What Happens Live. That is, it was a fabulous episode. We had a 10-minute after show of Watch What Happens Live, which never happens anymore. Usually those after shows are like 2 minutes and 45 seconds these days. It was a great episode of Watch What Happens Live. We got a lot from Paige. You know, she just kind of, she shared, just as Craig and his castmates have done all year, she finally sort of just like let it fly. You know, she was like, you know, he wanted to be the victim in this situation. And when Andy brought up, you know, everything that Craig said on the Southern Charm reunion, she was like, loved all of it. What a fun story. She knows how to give good shade, doesn't she? And, you know, I'll just run through these updates. She said that she absolutely has been seeing people, but nothing's been very serious, but she's been having a good time. To me, it sounds like she's maybe not with this D'Amelio guy that she went to the Super Bowl with earlier this year. To me, it's giving she really is kind of dating around. She's happy for Craig that he's found somebody. She says, I love it. And then as it pertained to him sort of fueling the cheating rumors about her, she says, you know, exes don't owe each other anything, but we're also in a different situation than normal exes. And I needed him not to lean into that. And he did, which I think is a fair answer because he did. It's like, again, every time on the reunion and on Watch What Happens Live, when Andy would ask him, you know, all the hot questions about their breakup, Craig would answer every single one except for the ones about cheating. He would suddenly say, I don't want to be attached to that. I'm not involved. So he did fuel it. He did. And she thinks they've both gotten in kind of an equal amount of hate, even though she said she was surprised about the amount of misogyny that she received in the wake of the breakup. And then she said that Kyle nailed it when he called Craig a liar. And he also, on the after show, she says that Pat from Southern Charm nailed it when she called herself a bitch, because Pat said about Paige that her and Naomi were both mean to Craig and he needs to find a nice girl. Madison also said that he needs to find a nice girl. And I think she said this in the Glamour interview. She was like, what's the common denominator there? It's Craig. So like, maybe you think about maybe what causes that treatment, or what causes the sort of him to think about it as being treated meanly. I think Pat, like, she's kind of this untouchable force in Bravo and she can say whatever she wants. And I kind of love that Paige is like, no, like, she's being a bitch to me. Like, as she said, she also talked about the Madison situation. And, you know, she said that she thought of them as friends, but then she heard sort of ahead of their breakup that Madison was talking shit about her. And then in January, so before Madison announced her pregnancy, after her and Craig had split, Madison texted her sort of checking in on her. And Paige was like, I didn't want to like give the tea to her. Like, that just like wasn't where I was at. And also like it also became clear that like she's on Craig's side of things, which is very natural. Like, of course, Madison's on Craig's side of things. So I guess at that point, Paige was sort of like done with her in terms of engaging. And so I think the rap on her from viewers is like, why didn't you text her at least to congratulate her on their pregnancy? But it's like, if you're not in a good place with someone, I don't think you're obligated to do that. It would have been nice, but I don't think she was obligated to. And then it was so interesting here at the top of the episode. Andy was like, we had the number one question for you, the one that everybody wanted to know. Were you really the breadwinner in your relationship with Craig? And it's interesting because the reaction to it is kind of twofold. I think some people are like, wait, does she really make more money than Craig? Like, how is she the breadwinner? But then there's another cohort of people that are like, well, my issue is that she used the term breadwinner because they're not married. They don't own they don't own property together and yada, yada, yada. It's like, okay, first of all, getting hung up on the particular wording or the vernacular or like the syntax of whatever somebody said, to me, that is a red flag. You're nitpicking, and like ultimately the larger argument is actually accurate. So I think a lot of the people who have this issue about the breadwinner comment that Paige made, they don't understand, one, how much brands will pay influencers and content creators and just, you know, public figure celebrity types of Paige's stature and reach. Brands will pay those people for sponsored content a lot of fucking money. And Paige gets really good brands. She posts brand deals multiple times a week. She's raking it in that way. She makes the Amazon Live money, which is probably pretty great. And I think a lot of these people are also very much in denial about how big Giggly Squad is. They're like, oh, well, Craig also has a podcast with Austin. And yeah, he does. And it's successful. And they tour it. And they probably make good money on it. It's not nearly to the level of Giggly Squad. It's not. The numbers show that. So I just think it's hilarious that people get hung up on this breadwinner thing. And then my friend Mandy Slutsker, who has been on the podcast, friend of the pod, she replied on Twitter and she made a great point. She was like, if you're hung up on the term breadwinner because they weren't married or don't own property together, you're ignoring the fact that that was their plan in their relationship to get married and to own property together and to have kids. That was the plan. So like, yeah, it's actually not that incorrect to call yourself the breadwinner when you're in that relationship and those are your plans. Like, people getting hung up on these technicalities is just so hilarious to me. It really, really is. So yeah, I thought Paige was fantastic on Watch What Happens Live. At first, I was like, oh, I wish they had waited till the finale because that could have been like a more epic thing. But I actually think that this was kind of good timing. She's clearly in such a happy place. She seems very good. She was lighthearted about a lot of the things. Like even when Andy was like, were you really going to get married at BravoCon? She was like, Andy. She looked at him like he was acting ridiculous, which he was. And she's like, you think that I'm going to get married with the term convention center on my invitation? Please. Which she's right. Like, I just thought that she was being funny. She was being her. She seemed like very much herself, not anxious about anything. And yeah, I really, really liked it. And I think that if they waited for the finale, maybe we would have expected the more like kind of like fiery energy from her in some way. So I think this was actually perfect. But I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation about Summer House specifically and how it's become all about the girls. So keep listening for my chat with Rebecca Jennings from Vulture. I'll link to her piece, Summer House is for the Girls, in the show notes if you want to read it. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you next week. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Rebecca Jennings, who is a feature writer at Vulture, who recently wrote an article called Summer House is for the Girls. 9 years in the Hamptons, reality stars have unlocked the secret to success, and it doesn't involve fighting over men. It featured a group interview with Lindsay, Amanda, Sierra, Paige, and Gabby. And today I have Rebecca on to discuss the article and some of the broader themes that it touches on as they relate to the changing landscape on Summer House, on Bravo. Rebecca, thanks for hopping on. Big week for you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, I mean, I guess just before we jump into the piece itself, talk to me just about like the conception of the piece. Like, when did you start maybe noticing this sort of sea change on the show? Did it come to you? How did this piece kind of come to be?
Oh my God, I'm so glad you asked that because I pitched this 2 years ago. And
wow.
My dream, I knew it was a pipe dream at the time. I pitched it to New York Mag when I was working at Vox or sister website. And I was like, listen, I don't know if anyone on your guys' end is watching Summer House, but it is like kind of the best show on Bravo right now. This was, I think, going into season 7.
So like the Lindsay Danielle fallout season?
Okay. Yes. And my vision was hoping that Bravo would let me in the house for a weekend. And I knew that was never going to happen.
Imagine.
But I was like, maybe I can come to one of the parties and like interview the girls when they're done filming, something like that. Tried to make that happen. Obviously did not happen. The next year, try it again. Of course, it didn't happen. And then this year, I think because this was the year that like the wider world started to realize like, oh, the show is a really big deal and it's really, really good. Bravo obviously did not let me go to the Hamptons, but they were willing to do, you know, a group interview. And I really like at this point, I was like, I think the women are the interesting characters here. And so we were able to, you know, get what we call it in New York, an encounter with all the women. And so we went to Swingers in Nomad. It's this like underground golf, like mini golf bar.
I kind of want to go now after reading.
I mean, it's massive. You're in there and you're like, oh my God, how much is the rent in this place? But yeah, we did like a photo shoot there. And then, you know, we all got food and we hung out and we chatted for like over an hour. It was great. And then I did some follow-up interviews and yeah, it was a really fun story to do.
And Lexi's the only girl that was not girl from the house that was not included. Is that, was there a reason for that?
So when we planned this, Lexi was not even announced. Like this was,
got it.
We planned this in, you know, I met with them in February, but this was being planned in like December, January. So Lexi was not a person that anyone knew. I didn't know that she was going to be on the show. And I think also the main focus was going to be about these women's arcs over the course of almost a decade, especially, you know, Lindsay and Amanda, who've been on for so long. It was really about like their kind of star moment happening this season and last season and even a little bit the season before. So it wasn't really about like all the women of Summer House, because obviously that would be a different story. But it was about like these women in particular becoming the main characters.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So you have quite the thesis statement, which is Summer House has always been a show about men fumbling beautiful women, which which is great and accurate. And it's funny because I feel like that's not immediately obvious if you were just like watch one episode of Summer House. Like if you were to hear, if somebody were to say, hey, what's Summer House about? That's not what you would say, obviously. But if you think back to it, you mentioned when Kyle struck out with Stassi in the sort of pilot premiere episode. Carl has struck out with a lot of the cast members. Jordan in season 3. Luke, Austin, West. I mean, that's just kind of what I thought about in 30 seconds. And it's funny also because this show, I think anecdotally for me, is like, it's the show that like a lot of straight men get into Bravo via Summer House. It's the show that like people's boyfriends and husbands watch with them, you know, and they, so I think it's really interesting that is sort of the thesis of your piece in some ways. And it's just not immediately kind of obvious. So talk to me a little bit about that sort of core idea.
Yeah. So I think when you watch old episodes of Summer House, it's like you're watching a completely different show. Like that, the original idea for the show was work hard, play hard, finding these really successful men. Ultimately, like Kyle was their star. He was the first one that they cast because he showed up at this casting call kind of like as a joke. And then he realized he knew way more about like the Hamptons work hard, play hard life than the producers. And so there was like this kind of moving the producers' hands. But Kyle was kind of like the heart of the show from the very beginning. And it was about, you know, he was this really successful entrepreneur. He was like this big personality. And he was very much a work hard, play hard guy. And I think like him and Carl and, you know, Everett and that early cast is very much like, we care deeply about our jobs. Like Lindsay was a publicist, like a really successful, like they were all very like successful and had money. And a lot of them, you know, kind of worked in finance adjacent media, tech, whatever jobs. And I think for a while that, you know, I think that is appealing to men as well as women. Like, you know, I think when we think of Bravo shows for young people, we were looking at Vanderpump Rules, where these are waiters, they're waitstaff. And, you know, that's a different kind of lifestyle than a 9-to-5er who's, you know, wants to be Jeff Bezos. So like Kyle clearly wanted to be this like tech mogul entrepreneur guy. And so it had a different energy. And I think the interesting thing was for the first 5 seasons, as I talked to one of the executive producers, like he had to fight to keep the show on the air. Like people weren't really watching it. They didn't really think it was that interesting. I always did. But
But I think that evolution's, it's kind of clear. And we'll talk about it later, but you point to season 3, which is when Paige and Hannah join as a big inflection point. I think the pandemic season was a big inflection point for the show. I think that's totally accurate. And it's also funny because I think Kyle, like you said, he was sort of the nucleus. He was sort of the seed of the show. And I think in some ways, he probably still considers it to be his show. And I think that's sort of why he still talks about it. But I think that, I feel like he would read your article, your feature, and I don't think you necessarily disagree with it either. You know, I think that he is like acknowledged the evolution of the show too. So I think that's a really sort of an interesting tension in there with Kyle. I don't know if all the other men would do that, but
no, totally. And Kyle was the only guy on Summer House that I interviewed for the piece, and he was so gracious. He talked to me for way longer than he had to. You know, I had like 15 minutes with him, and I became like over 30. Yeah, I know. He was so gracious, and I explained to him, I was like, this is really a story about like the women of Summer House kind of being ascendant in this world, and he totally got it. And but at the same time, he really was like, he was the face that they were like, this is our star. And I think he's done a great job of being, you know, one of the hearts of that show.
Yeah, sure. Totally. And so you spoke to Ronnie from Watch What Crappens, and so we talk a little bit about the early parts of the early seasons of the show, where he says ultimately it was a bachelor type show where the whole point was then to be hooking up with each other. Then like it would devolve in like the women fighting sort of explicitly or indirectly over men. He also says it was about those guys and who they were banging. So they were the main characters basically. Yeah. And why in your mind do you think that didn't really connect in the way that the show connects now? Like what about that was disjointed or...
Yeah. I mean, as much as, you know, so many reality TV shows work best when there's people flirting and hooking up and breaking up and getting in fights, whatever. Those are always really good, like, draws for drama and tension. But, like, I think the important thing is that they're people that we want to root for or root against, like that they're characters that we love or love to watch. And I think that the characters we have learned to love the most have on that show in general have been the women. And I think that wasn't necessarily the case at the beginning. I think, like, you know, Lindsay was had always kind of been this kind of, well, like, larger than life kind of villain figure. Like, she like, people really hated her for a really long time. And it's been really rewarding, actually, to see, like,
I agree,
her growth, I guess, but also, you know, still that kind of the lovable messiness and that relatable ability there. But at the same time, I don't want to go so far and say, like, that's not what they're still trying to do, because I think, and again, like, this was mostly written and conceptualized before most of the season had aired. And I think what you're seeing now, I mean, one really good example of this is the fact that Bailey was basically not shown on the show because she lied about having a boyfriend. Like, they wanted her there to hook up with either Wes or Jesse or Carl. Mm-hmm. And that's not what happened. And that's how that's. Like, look what happened there.
Right.
And same with Lexi. It's like Lexi is there to be, like, the girl that Jesse wants and is fumbling, as always.
Totally. Yeah. And I also think that that idea kind of speaks a little bit to why the Imrul kind of disconnect is happening, too. Because, like, I mean, it's more than this. But I think, you know, I think the people who have sort of defended, like, any sort of criticism of Imrul is, like, kind of hooking up with all these different women for one night and then whatever, and we don't even see their faces. I think they're like, oh, but Summer House is about people hooking up. And yes, but we also need the personality attached to it. We need also the connection to the rest of the group. It can't be the sort of anonymous hookups that we're seeing. I think that explains maybe the lack of appetite for that, perhaps, and sort of the evolution of the viewer.
Totally. It's like, I think Imrul could be such a fun cast member on Summer House, but the fact that, like, we're rarely seeing him, first of all, and whenever he does, like, have his sexcapades, he's, like, covering the cameras with this, like, it's like, you know what show you're on, like, the kind of security cameras are part of it, and I think the fact that the other house members are also getting annoyed, it's like, clearly you're not clicking either with audiences and your cast members, which is never a great sign.
So I have a little bit of a lengthy passage to read, but we're going to get into the sort of the season three arrival of Paige and Hannah. And you say that this was a turning point for the show. Their arrival coincided with the rise of Me Too, when watching a bunch of women fighting about guys who cheated on and lied to them began to feel less like fun escapism and more like a painful reminder of the permissiveness of heterosexual culture. The cooling cultural appetite for drunken hookups could have spelled catastrophe for Summer House, but viewers seemed enthralled with Paige and Hannah's friendship even more than their romantic entanglements. Which is, I mean, I never connected it to the, you know, the arrival of the Me Too movement or the emergence around that time. And I think that's really apt. And obviously there was a lot of sort of a trickle down effect of how that affected many parts of culture. Was that immediately obvious to you, or was that something that in your process of writing this piece kind of like was a light bulb moment for you?
Oh, I think it was totally a light bulb moment. And you know what I'll compare it to is I love, as like a student of Housewives, I love watching pre-2008 financial crisis Housewives. And there's only a couple seasons of it, but you can see this major shift and in the way they talk about money, in the way they dress, in the way they kind of compare themselves to each other. And in like the humbling that happens to a lot of them, especially the ones that worked in real estate in the OC. And I think a similar thing happened on Vanderpump Rules after Me Too and after Trump. You know, you have kind of the cancellation of Stassi. You have, you know, Lala kind of being this like girl power, like, you know, quasi-feminist voice on that show that previously was all about like, you cheated on my boyfriend, which is, you know, less fun to watch, you know, immediately post Me Too. And I think the same thing happened with, you know, Paige and Hannah arriving in a way where like previously we had the first two seasons, it was like Amanda versus Lindsay versus like the Workus twins versus like Christina.
Poor Christina. Like, poor
kind of nasty. It was a little nasty. And I think there was an appetite for female friendship. When you're in this house with a bunch of women, it's like, it again, like a lot of Housewives shows, they're not fun to watch when everyone's fighting with each other. And so I think them being such like fun friends to watch, like you wanted to be friends with them. You didn't want to be friends with like Lindsay because she'd be biting your head off, you know? And I think even like Lindsay and Danielle's friendship, which I've always loved to watch, but I think it was a little like there's been a lot of shaky moments there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that it just reflected an appetite in the culture. And I think it was great timing.
Totally. And I think you also sort of connect it to like the changing nature around how they sort of front loaded the their professions and things like that, and sort of the 9-to-5 go-getter mentality. Like Paige and Hannah are absolutely go-getters, but in a different kind of trajectory than the other women were and other men were. And that definitely was a sort of refreshing thing. They'd actually met at work, I think, was sort of the storyline that we were fed. But yeah, I think before that, you're right. Like there hadn't been a central female friendship. And you think about Housewives. Yeah, it can be fun to watch some of the fallout, but ultimately it's more fun to watch people have fun together and to laugh with them. I feel like that's ultimately more rewarding. And that's that's what Paige and Hannah gave us. Like it felt like with them, no men were ever going to get in between them. That was clear kind of immediately from the get, right? Like that was immediately kind of part of their MO.
Yeah, extremely. And I think that was the thing that people were really hungry for. Like I still see fan cams of like Bethany and Carol's relationship. Yes. It's like people want this, or like Sonya and Ramona. Like, you know, this is like more compelling in a lot of ways than, you know, a divorce or a breakup or something.
Yeah, totally. So then you talk about how over the past two seasons, viewers have tuned into Summer House less to watch disastrous situationships end in flames, though that is always a reliable draw, and more to watch a group of relatable women calling out the shitty behavior of men who don't deserve them. The women, in other words, have become the main characters and we're primed to root for them. So I'm curious, before we get into it specifically for Summer House, do you feel like Scandoval sort of, how much do you think that played into also this sort of changing, kind of flipping of the script in Summer House, which was already underway, obviously, but Scandoval, I feel like, had to have fueled some of that, you know?
Dude, I feel like Scandoval completely, I think it showed what could happen when your friend group breaks up in such like a disastrous way, in such a way that like, you can't really come back from that. And that could spell the end of your show. And I think like, there was a world in which Lindsay and Carl breaking up, or Wes and Sierra like not being able to be together, like that could have broken up what was a cast that really worked. Like I feel like the last 3 years, the cast of Summer House has just been like on fire. So fun to watch. But like, but then, you know, we've seen what can happen when people can't be in a room together anymore. Like shows don't work anymore. And so I think on that level, there was, I mean, I was scared as a viewer, like what's going to happen? Like you can't kick any of these people off. They're all so great. So I think from that level, like Scandoval was a turning point in that sense.
And I also feel like from viewers, though, there's almost this want to like replicate that feeling, because it was this sort of like, it was this big cultural moment. Like we were all behind Ariana, like fuck Tom Sandoval kind of vibe. And I feel like there's almost, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've sort of noticed amongst viewers and especially fans who are vocal on social media is like they're kind of striving to make any sort of breakup a Scandoval level thing.
Totally.
And it's sort of like, yeah, I that was an amazing moment as a reality TV viewer. Like I will never forget it. But like
I know.
But it's like, you know, some of these breakups on Summer House in particular are just kind of like they're great for TV, but they're pretty run of the mill if they were to happen in real life. Like there's nothing like super, but what makes them extraordinary is the fact that it is reality, that they are reality stars and they're sort of the fame aspect. But do you feel like there's this like, I don't know, they almost like place more emphasis on misdeeds that make them feel like bigger deals than they often are?
Oh, yeah. No, I get what you're saying. Totally. I totally think that. Like, I think Lindsay and Carl kind of the whole dragged out conversation, like whether he called the cameras in to break up with her. It's like, well, that's kind of his job. And I think producers were probably pretty annoyed that Craig and Paige didn't do theirs on camera. And it's like,
right.
But now having watched, and this is just me totally just, you know, trying to get in someone else's head, but like having watched what happened with Carl and Lindsay, it's like, I wouldn't have called the producers either, because then you look like the asshole that's like doing this for the cameras and making yourself there's so much like meta games being played with Bravo now, because they know that there is, you know, this entire world of people who talk about their decisions and root for them and like want to be right, want to have the right opinion. And I think with like Paige and Craig, like when they first broke up, it was like, okay, yeah, like who hasn't seen a relationship where one person wanted to settle down and one person wanted to focus on work? No, neither of them wanted to move to each other's cities. So it's like, yeah, they should break up. But like then when it becomes like, oh, like, well, she's already out like with some guy holding hands, or like he's like texting other girls. It's like someone has to be found like at fault, and someone has to like kind of not canceled, but like just be the bad guy here.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. Like so. And so I think there's this race. And I admire the fact that Paige and Craig, like their breakup started as like, oh, it was like a nice, you know, it's just didn't work out. But then the reality machine did what it always does. And, you know, his friends kept going on and implying stuff that, like, you know, everybody knows what you mean. You're implying that she cheated,
exactly.
But it's like
a dog whistle.
Yeah, totally. It's a dog whistle. And so I think there is probably a desire to, like, either, like, whether they're in, like, consciously doing it or not, the machine is trying to create another Scandoball-level misdeed.
Absolutely.
Even when it's just a normal breakup.
Exactly. Absolutely. And you have this great quote from Lindsay in there where she says, "What I've noticed about the guys in our cast, maybe I'll catch some heat for this, I don't give a fuck, they can't handle the confrontation or negative feedback or press that comes with this job." And I feel like we'll get into sort of the viewer response to it in a second, but like that definitely plays into it. But I also feel like the women are almost primed, maybe based off their experience on early seasons or something, to like to receive that negative feedback, to get that bad press, and for the people to sort of side with the men. And then when the men are held, have these moments of being held accountable or reflecting on their behavior, it's a lot more difficult for them to handle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I've interviewed many Bravo celebrities. All they want to do is talk about how crazy Bravo fans are. Like, they all love talking about that. And it's when we talked about it, it was sort of like, you know, Bravo fan base is like, you know, mostly women. And the criticism that they get from women that are even like older than they are is just like the nastiest things they've ever heard anyone say. And meanwhile, like the men are just, it's very much like boys will be boys, whatever. And so I think, yeah, like as soon as you go on Bravo, you're going to catch a ton of like, just horrible, like people will say horrible things to you, and I have such like empathy for that.
I think
it must be so hard. Because I think with a lot of the female viewers too, it's like you want these bad evil men because they are in many cases providing the drama. You want a Jax, you want a Sandoval and a Schwartz, like you want, like, you know, some guy being a shithead so that the girls have something to fight over, and then you get to judge the women for how they handle what when things like when horrible things happen to them. That's, you know, a lot of what Bravo is. So that kind of inherently places, like, gives the men a lot more leeway to be the bad guy and the women way less leeway because whatever they do, if they break up with them, if they stay with them, if they do whatever, they're going to catch a ton of heat from it.
Yeah, it's either way, it's almost a lose-lose for them in certain for certain sort of cohorts of the viewers. And Sierra says, like, that they get to hide behind the sort of I'm a good guy mask. And then Amanda points out that people who are most critical of us are women our age or older. They have said the nastiest things about us. And I also read Brittany from The Valley did a sort of first-person thing for The Cut, and she talked about how, you know, Bravo is watched mostly by women, but they want to forgive the hot men. I don't know if that's true or not, but it just seems like the guys are forgiven a whole lot easier than the women are. And I also wonder a little bit of like, I think it's a little bit more difficult to find a good male reality star. And I think that Bravo 100%. Likes to hold on to them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that. I'm not blaming the network for wanting to do that. But I think that, like, that has to be an element too, where it's like, and we've seen on Summer House, like, they've cycled through a lot of one season wonder, pretty much dud guys, you know, on this show. And like, so when they find a West or a Jesse, you want to hold on to them, you know?
Oh, 100%.
And so it's like, part of that is the experience overall, I guess.
Yeah. No, 100%. And I don't know if this actually made the article, but I had a quote from Kyle saying that, like, after season one, it was so hard to cast the men because what they wanted was these work hard, play hard types, but they all worked in finance. And anyone that had like a job in finance, they were like, they can't even go to the parties. Like, so many of like their IRL friends, like, aren't actually the ones like on the show, or at least in the beginning, because they couldn't have anything to do with it. They had their jobs were like too sensitive and important. And even Danielle's job, like, she kind of like, I interviewed her for this, and she was working in fintech at the time. And, you know, it was a thing. Like, it was kind of a problem that she was doing the show, and it ended up being fine. But, like, you know, that was a huge problem that they had in terms of casting. And that's why season three, when they brought on like Paige and Hannah, that was like a huge turning point for the show, because like those girls were not in that world. Like, they were in like kind of like a media company, which is like, you know, where we get West. Like, West is a journalist. And so those are jobs that are a little bit more like Bravo friendly.
Yeah. And you can be a content creator adjacent kind of thing. Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And it also just like reflected, you know, where people's attention were going as well. It's like they're more suited for like the influencer era versus the first season of Summer House, where like these people were not like, you know, natural influencers. Of course they are now, but like, you know.
And it's funny because I feel like, again, just sort of anecdotally, like I have a lot of female friends who watch Bravo, and it's like they kind of fall into one or two camps with a lot of these guys that we're talking about, which is like they either like are attracted to them and like have crushes on them, and that sort of fuels, I think, their adoration of them in some ways, or like they're really icked out by their behavior and they're like, yeah, fuck these dudes. Like, and also like they're making TikToks like, ooh, that's cringe. It's kind of like, I feel like generally speaking, it kind of falls into one of the two camps. And it's just an interesting dichotomy, I think, that emerges.
Well, I think that's exactly why Summer House is so relatable, especially if you're a woman in your 20s or 30s in New York. It's like, because the women on the show have the same feeling. They're attracted to them, but they're also icked out by them. And that is like the experience of dating in New York. It's like, you're like, I'm a bad bitch. I'm successful. I don't need you, but I think you're like kind of cute, but also you're acting like a fucking idiot. Like, women don't want to be put in that situation, but it happens all the time. It's like, I want to like you, but you're making it really hard. And then also, like, you're not treating me very well. So it's like, either do better or like hit the road. And I feel like we see that play out over and over again. And then as soon as you start to trust them, then they'll like screw you over, which is like, you know, Sierra's, like what happened with Wes and Sierra. It's just like, it's so frustrating to watch, but it's also just so relatable. Like,
totally. And then we have Sierra now with Jesse. It's like they have this clear chemistry just like existing between them, but people are, and she's sworn off situationships on the show, showmances, but then there's a contingent of people, kind of myself included, that's like, wait, can you give it a shot? Because like, you do have undeniable chemistry, and it's like this catch 22 of the situation they find themselves in, and they have the reality star experience is so like unrelatable from the actual experiencing of it. And so like, it's sort of like, oh, this person gets it, you know? So
yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's hard because Sierra like has charisma with like anybody. So it's like, people totally are shipping her with like Carl, people are shipping her with Jesse, people are shipping her with like all these guys. It's like, that's just like her being charming. but that's why she's such a great star for the show. That's why so many of them, like, they could, you know, just be charming to anybody and they're lucky to be there.
Sort of on the flip side of things, there's something I wanted to bring up with you, is I feel like what's funny is that Southern Charm is sort of like the inverse of everything we're talking about, because show, which was originally going to be called Southern Gentlemen, it's from the perspective of Shep, Craig, and Austin. And they have been the constants for so long, Shep and Craig, since the beginning. And then the women on that show kind of get cycled in and out every couple seasons because they've either hooked up with a guy and it's fallen out, or they just didn't connect with any of them to begin with and they kind of get axed from the show. And that, I think, it's actually been increasingly more maddening to watch as the years have gone on, maybe because of what's happening on Summer House, and it's that sort of culture bleeding out into the rest of the younger shows, quote unquote. I don't know. I'm curious what you think about that, because it is very much the inverse of everything we're talking about.
No, I think that's such a good point. And that's, I mean, frankly, like, that's why I stopped watching it. Like, I watched the first probably like 5 or 6 seasons of Southern Charm because, you know, I liked Cam and I liked Chelsea, and Catherine was just, wild to watch. But like, it was so infuriating how, like, I think like by the time like Austin came around, I like loved Naomi. But it just felt like the women were sort of like, okay, who's Shep screwing this week or whatever.
Yeah.
And just to watch them get frustrated and just like fall by the wayside. And then, you know, but to me, it's like, that's such a foreign culture. It's like that guy, like Whitney and what's his face, the redhead, Catherine's, Thomas Ravenel. Like, oh my God, like who, like these people are like nightmarish figures. It's like I watched it almost just out of pure like horror, but. I don't watch anymore, and that's exactly why. And that's why I love Summer House.
Yeah. And I would love to see data just in terms of like, because there are people on social media who are very much like Craig, like hardcore defenders in terms of the Paige and Craig breakup. And like, I would venture to guess that a lot of those people are sort of a little bit more, you know, devoted to Southern Charm as a show than they are to Summer House. Part of that is because Southern Charm has been around for a lot longer. But like, in terms of like regional and generational data, I would love to see like sort of how that's explained, you know, because I do think that would be explained by some of those factors. I don't know. It's fascinating to me. It is.
I can't think of like a single like girl in New York that I know that it would be like Team Craig. Like, come on. But I'm sure, like, but at the same time, he's tall, he's handsome, like
He's a catch.
It's kind of been like this, girls are mean to me. Like,
it's a where we sort of land is with your piece. You say the show, I think we've sort of already gotten into this a little bit, but the show has the show more centered around the kinds of things women in their early 30s think and talk about, and less around the who's hooking up with who drama of earlier seasons. And when you brought this up, I had actually just read an article on Vox by, I'm presuming maybe one of your colleagues, Kendall Cunningham. She wrote this article about the sort of girly podcast boom of Giggly Squad and The Toast and all these different podcasts that are by women in their mid to early 30s and talk about some of these things. So like Giggly Squad, it can be very much tied up into this trend. And do you think that there is, I guess the broader, I was going to ask about a broader societal factor, but I guess that is sort of the sea change that came with the Me Too movement.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm so fascinated by this podcast verse of podcasts for girlies. Like, I think it's so interesting. And I think because they're so successful because like you want these podcast hosts to be your friends. They sound like your friends. They talk about the same things that your friends talk about. And I think like I attribute a lot of that to like, you know, some of the changes that we see on Summer House and on Bravo. It's like you see women talking about like freezing their eggs and like,
yeah,
you know, like what medication they're taking. Like these are the things that girlies talk about on their podcast because when you're in a podcast, it doesn't feel like anyone else is listening. So it feels very intimate. But now that intimacy kind of comes to these shows in a way too, where it's like, you know, I feel like that would have been, you know, pretty intimate thing to talk about 10 years ago on TV. Like, you know, whether you're taking your depression medication, like if you want to like have kids and like how that would affect a pregnancy, like the way Amanda did early on in the season. Like, it's like a cool thing to bring up. And it's like, that is what women talk about when like to their friends. And so, yeah, I think that just only makes this show even more relatable to like, if you're going through that phase of your life. And I know it's not like, you know, they're not 22, they're 32, but that's still like a huge part of Bravo's fan base.
Yeah. And I feel like that is almost them growing up with the viewer too. It's like we're sort of moving along in life with them. And I feel like the thing about what Amanda brought up, it's like that would have been cut from the show 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like that wouldn't have been like a, so I think that's absolutely correct. And so I guess, where do you think this is taking the show in the future? Because I feel like in some ways, and again, I think I agree with you that like 7, 8, 9 in terms of the seasons of Summer House have, these are going to be the glory days of the show in many ways.
Totally.
But it's like, it does feel like they're sort of, if they keep going along this path, it gets them away from sort of the original core premise of the show, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But then we have people kind of aging out, quote unquote, of the show, or like being in a next stage of life, Lindsay having a baby, you know, Kyle and Amanda, whatever that looks like for them. Like there are these people who, even Paige has talked about it, I think publicly, like, you know, there being some friction between her actual lifestyle and the lifestyle of the show. So like, just as a fan and an expert around Bravo, like, what do you think and hope is sort of next for it? Like, what do you think is the answer to keep these people around, but also keep Summer House around?
I mean, I think that the way that they'll probably have to do it is like keep who they can keep. And, you know, if one of them decide, if Lindsay decides, if Lindsay moves over to Roni or something, or if she, you know, is more of like a friend of, she'll come a couple weekends and party and whatever. But I think the show will like kind of deviate. If they do that, the show will deviate from their like, okay, every week theme party is like, because it's just not like, even this season you see like Paige and Sierra just like going out, like they don't want to go to these parties where it's like, are their friends even there? Like they, like these are fans. They like, it looks like there's fans coming in, and I have no idea like whose friends these are, but it's just like, all we kind of see is like people getting drunk in the background and then them kind of just being, let's go to bed. And I'm like, yeah, sure. That's very relatable. If you're like in your 30s and you're partying in the Hamptons, it's like, you don't really want to do that every weekend at a certain point. But like, I still think that there is, I mean, what I would do is find people that, if they still want to do this, is like, I'd still be really interested in seeing a show about like the more like the financy kind of people that they had really like a lot of trouble getting. But I think that was 10 years ago. I think now you might have an easier time because there is more of like a language around shows like this. They're more popular, they're more common, getting some like work hard, play hard finance guys in their 20s. Or girls in their 20s, and then just developing kind of like a new group, because it's the show's deviated so much from that like if you do that again, I don't think it'll kind of step on its toes. Or like, you know, Housewives, but you're in your 20s. Like, I know they're trying to do that with like the Nepo babies of Housewives, but we'll see.
I would rather I would rather like the Valley for this, like just that age, that sort of life stage where you are having babies. Maybe you're buying an apartment. Maybe you have a house upstate or whatever it is. But like that sort of, I'm giving the Nepo Baby show a shot, but I'm not sure that's going to scratch the itch. Because I feel like, you know, I think our discussion of Paige in particular has sort of reflected this. Like people get invested in the personalities. Same with Lindsay. It's like people have had this like love-hate relationship with Lindsay for 9 years now. Like that investment in personalities and in stars and in talent at the network, like that's really hard to recreate, I think. And the Vanderpump Rules reboot is going to test that. Like, I feel like they can't abandon these people. I feel like they got to have a landing place for them in the city and on a show.
Totally. I completely agree. And I think, you know, the people will be the one, like the cast will have to be the ones to be like, I don't want to do this anymore. But yeah, I hope that doesn't happen anytime soon.
Yeah, me too. Well, Rebecca, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat today. I really loved the feature. Everyone, I'll link to it, of course, for everybody to read it. Is there anything else that was sort of lingering for you in terms of Summer House, or have we kind of, I feel like we've hit most of the bases.
We've totally touched on it. I mean, I can give one like tidbit that also didn't make the story, which is that the executive producer that I talked to, he was like, when Kyle came in, he was like, there's no way we can put this guy on TV. He's so boring. He was like in work mode, apparently.
Oh my God.
Just like, he was so not convinced. They like really had to sell him on Kyle. And apparently because they met in, you know, a midtown, like high rise kind of thing. And he was like, this is just like some business guy. But he didn't see him when he was like out like partying. And the same thing happened with Paige. Like Paige like came in to meet him and he was like, this girl's like perfectly fine, but like she's not like, she's just like a girl. And he was like, we never realized like how funny she was. And so it wasn't until both of them were like out in the Hamptons, like partying with their friends, that they were like, oh, and like two of the biggest stars on Bravo, like right there. And that they were just like, we're not sure. Yeah.
So wild. It's so wild. That's amazing. Well, is there anything else that you want to plug? Where can people find your writing, follow you on social media before we sign off here?
Oh, yeah, you can find my writing at New York Magazine, and you can follow me at Rebexa with 4 X's on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for doing this, and hopefully we get to chat again about another piece in the future. So thanks so much.
Hope so. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.